Yet another meta-analysis. So my name is Rachel Cook. I'm the soil fertility professor or assistant professor at Southern Illinois University. I got into this through the 4R Research Fund RFP, and I hadn't actually done a meta-analysis before, and I said, oh, well, that can't be too hard. Okay, so it's been a long road, but I've learned a lot, and I actually took the workshop on Sunday, and now I feel like I need to go back and redo a lot of stuff. But this is what I did, you know, up until now. So if you ever think you're going to do a meta-analysis by yourself, then either plan on having a couple years free or hire some extra people. So it takes a long time to wade through all the papers, and a big challenging part of meta-analysis is just coming together every week with everybody and saying, how are we going to put this paper in the database? Well, that one was merged funny. How are we going to do this? And a lot of stuff isn't reported. And so a big part of a meta-analysis is the challenge of just pulling the data together. So I have a team of people that helped me bring all of this to fruition. So the project objective was to ask the question of, do enhanced efficiency fertilizers, one, improve yield, and then two, have an impact on some environmental things that we're interested in, like nitrate leaching and N2O emissions. So obviously the context of this is nitrogen is a huge influence in yield. You know, we make our recommendations primarily off of the price of corn and the price of fertilizer, and then, of course, I think everybody here is aware of the issues with water quality, Gulf hypoxia, and local watersheds as well. So we know that, you know, folks in Iowa are suing each other over this stuff. So we need to get some more studies and figure out what management practices can we do to improve water quality with nitrogen management. And then, of course, we're not regulating N2O emissions yet, but it probably is just a matter of time before this gets, you know, to be a bigger issue. So we really need some more information on how to better reduce N2O emissions, and nitrogen fertilizer is a major influencer of that. And of course, you know, you have to have your obligatory dead fish in the green water photo to illustrate this issue. So since this is a 4R fund project, of course, you have to put everything in context of your source rate, time, and place, right? And so we're looking at the yield, nitrate losses, and N2O emissions. And so we wanted to say how do nitrification inhibitors, urease inhibitors, and polymer-coated fertilizers influence all of these things in the context of the 4R sort of paradigm. But we know that 4Rs aren't the only thing that influence, you know, these outputs. So we all were also asking the question, how does climate and soils and rotation and tillage. And this was taking actually a much bigger bite than I realized, you know, when you first put in the proposal and you're like, oh, well, this sounds like a great idea. And then you go, oh, my gosh, what was I thinking? So if you don't have a background in enhanced efficiency fertilizers, this is sort of just a quick overview. You have nitrification inhibitors, which are a tool to reduce N losses. And so the ones that we primarily look at, the ones on the market, are Agritain Plus, which can be liquid or with coating urea, or Super U, which is a granule. Then you also have nitropyrin, which is sold as Inserv or Instinct. And nitropyrin influences or basically stops the action of nitrosamonas. So basically you have, you know, the soil and you're growing your corn, and you have nitrification of your ammonium-based fertilizers, and your losses are from either leaching, so that's the water quality issue, or denitrification, which can also be losses in 2O. So that's your 2-second overview of the nitrogen cycle part of it. And then we have urease inhibitors. So if you're putting urea, granular urea, on the surface, particularly if you have a high residue situation, you have a big chance of losing a lot of your nitrogen. And that's going to depend on your urease activity, which has to do with your residue and microbes, and then it also is going to have to do with how dry your soil is, what the humidity is, what the soil pH is, your temperature, a lot of stuff. So the things on the market for urease inhibitors, the primary one is Agritain, that's NBPT. There's a new one on the market, Lemus, this year, and it's basically NBPT with NPPT as well, but that wasn't in the meta-analysis because it's just coming out. So it's basically just inhibiting that urease enzyme. Then we also looked at polymer-coated fertilizers. So you have a regular urea granule. And I actually got to go to the ESN coating facility about a month ago, and it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. So you take urea and you coat it with this polymer, and basically the water infuses through the polymer, and then temperature lets it, you know, sort of soak out over time. And the primary product for that is ESN. There's a few observations of duration, but ESN is the primary product here. There were a few other products that we sort of lumped into slow-release fertilizer because we weren't really sure what to do with them. So if you see, when you see SR in a minute, that means slow-release fertilizer. There's not a whole lot of observations for these, and so they really weren't even, except for the calcium thiosulfate, they aren't included very much in the meta-analysis. Okay. So you have to, the biggest part about a meta-analysis and a systematic review is that you don't want to be cherry-picking data. You set your parameters ahead of time, and you say these are the things that are going to be included or not. And so we said we're going to stick to inorganic fertilizers because manure is a whole other, you know, thing. We wanted to focus on the Midwest because that's where most of the corn production is. Just defining the Midwest is a little bit of a challenge in terms of, do you include eastern Colorado? Halverson has a lot of nice information. So, you know, sort of drawing the borders of the Midwest is something you have to think about, too. It had to be a field study. We didn't include any lab studies. We had to set a, you know, time point at something. So we said published in the last 20 years. We said that's kind of the most recent observations. So, and, you know, sort of most current practices. If the publication had studies from before 20 years, we included that. It just had to be, you know, for the search purposes, published within the last 20 years. And then we said it needed to report means with either standard or standard deviation. We still included it in the database because we said, sort of like what we were talking about earlier, maybe there will be some ways to impute some of the data. So we went ahead and included it in the database, but we sort of, well, I'll talk about it later, but how we analyzed it, we usually didn't include those. We got in touch with every author that we could to get that information. And this is, you know, sort of, as more people are doing meta-analysis, this, you probably ought to put in your grant funding to, like, give them an honorarium or something, because it's going to take them a couple days to go back through their hard drive and find some of this data. So as more and more people are doing meta-analysis, you know, if, you know, such and such researcher keeps getting pinged because everybody wants their standard error, standard deviation, they're going to get tired of, you know, sending that to you. So that's kind of a issue as well, but you know, the number one thing is when you publish studies, just include your standard error, standard deviation. That won't be a problem, and don't average across things. So it makes it really hard. So we also included, because there's quite a few studies, particularly in production agriculture, where you know, SSSAJ doesn't want to publish yet another trial showing the same thing that's already been shown before, right? So you have a lot of stuff that's out there that doesn't get into published literature because, well, we've already seen that, or it's non-significant, so we aren't interested. So there was a fair amount of stuff, so we did include theses, dissertations, reports, and proceedings if they met, you know, if they met sort of a good scientific criteria, you know, had reps and all that kind of stuff. So some people could argue with whether or not you should do that. So we included, we had sort of 87, you know, columns across this data set. And so all in all, it ended up being about 100,000 cells of data. It got to be a monster. So we included as much as we could about the study, where it was, Latin long, everything we could about the fertilizer, all the 4R stuff, planting date, harvest date, when the splits were, how much were in each split. Total rate, so rate is important, obviously, when it was put on. And then if they included soils information, we put that in. If not, we went to Web Soil Survey and went and got it as much as best as we could based on Latin long. And then a big thing is a lot of people don't include climate data. So we had to go fishing for a lot of climate data. And that was sort of challenging, and also in terms of what's the best climate data to fish for. And so that was sort of a challenge. So we got a lot of stuff from DayMet as best we could. And then we also included irrigation. So some people were irrigated, some people weren't. So we ended up making a variable of sort of total water that was irrigation and precipitation for the season. And then, of course, we had yield, the leaching data, and the N2O data. Okay. So this is the leaching data. So as you can see, we decided not to do a meta-analysis on this. There, basically, Giles-Randall is the and now Jeff Fetch is the main source of leaching data that fit with enhanced efficiency fertilizers. So there are some other leaching studies, but not that also include enhanced efficiency fertilizers. The other big problem with this is some people report in yield scaled, so amount of N2O emissions per bushel, and some people report per acre. And some people don't report enough to be able to calculate the other thing. So if you're gonna do one or the other, I don't care. Just put it in your supplemental so that we can calculate the other thing. that's a problem with nitrate leaching and with N2O. And I think Allison will probably talk about that some too. So N2O had a better spread, and again, you know, Halverson has a lot of really good data in eastern Colorado. Should that really be the Midwest? So once I found out Allison was working a lot more with N2O and had sort of a bigger geographic range, then I kind of said I'm going to focus more on yield. And I may come back more to this once I've published the yield stuff, since I have it. But for now, I want to focus on yield because we had a lot better data for it. So I wanted to spend my time more on this. So yield was pretty good. Okay. So we had, because the different sources of fertilizer kind of inherently have different enhanced efficiency fertilizers that go with it and have different kinds of application styles and stuff, we separated it into a model for anhydrous ammonia, for urea ammonium nitrate, which is a liquid, and for granular urea. And for each one, we considered the enhanced EEF is enhanced efficiency fertilizer. We looked at application timing, rate, place, and then when possible, depending on how many combinations of things we had, we looked at rotation and tillage, temperature, water, you know, soil factors, and then as a random effect, we have year nested within county. And county sort of incorporated soils and, you know, where the location was. County was a good sort of proxy for, like, that place. Most studies only had one thing in one county. So we kind of did two different ways. We did a traditional meta-analysis, and then we did basically a traditional mixed model, which now after taking the workshop, I'm like, can we really do that? But we did it anyway. So we did that in GLEMIX, so that it was a nice random effects model. So if you do the traditional meta-analysis, where you do your pairings. I split this on top. You have nitropyrene versus AA. So this is only the ones that have standard error, standard deviation. Okay, so this excludes everything that doesn't have some error associated with it. So you see third from the top, the SR, that's the slow release. You see a big error bars on that, right? Anything that's in black is not significantly different from zero. Anything that's in blue has an effect, okay? So we played around a little bit with a log response ratio versus just showing the actual yield effect size, and it didn't make a difference. It's a lot easier to interpret yield than it is log response ratio. So I'm showing the yield. So that's in megagrams per hectare, but for those of you like me that are more accustomed to thinking in bushels per acre, I put the bushels per acre translation on there. So the ones that came out as significant were basically super U, which is MPPD plus DCD versus urea. The agritain or MPPD versus urea came out as the best significant improvement. And then the PCF, which is sort of short for polymer-coated fertilizer, was also significant. So again, you can see, and then I put the sort of number of studies on the left and then the number of effects on the right. So this is the overall big summary, not taking anything else into account besides just this minus that. So this is a first look at that. Okay, so then for the mixed model approach, this is broken into the different sources. So the first one, anhydrous versus anhydrous with nitropyrene, so I have highlighted here the effect of EEF. So EEF is basically, you know, anhydrous versus anhydrous with nitropyrene, and it has a p-value of about 0.16. So you might call that a trend. You know, it doesn't fit the 0.05 level, The interesting thing, the really interesting thing I got out of this was, so EEF, like, okay, but application time, really significant. So this, I think, is the interesting part about doing a mixed model, and you could do this with traditional meta-analysis now that I've learned more. But this really shows application time has a much greater effect than enhanced efficiency fertilizer. Okay, and so at planting was 17 bushels per acre greater than pre-plant, and pre-plant means more than 5 days before planting versus fall. So, you know, that to me was an interesting thing that came out. The other ones in there, so rate, that's rate total, and so that's a continuous variable. So there was a pH versus rate total interaction. So whatever that means. I don't pretend to have all the answers to this stuff. So UAN was particularly interesting, I thought, because it was really not significant. So, you know, 0.16, you could say, well, there maybe there's some cases where it works. UAN, you have a hard time making a case with a 0.8 p-value. There's much going on there. So application time, again, very important. You'll see that over and over. So EEF in this case included UAN, UAN with Agritane, UAN with Agritane Plus, UAN with Instinct and Cats, and there was just a couple with Nutrisphere. And so Tukey's could not separate any of these things, obviously, from each other. Again, at planting or side dress. At planting split with side dress was better than just a one single dose at planting. And I've seen that in my own field, you know, research too, that splits are typically better. And again, on this one, there was a whole lot of stuff going on with soils and climate data. Urea was the most interesting one if you want to try to publish something with a, you know, significant result. So so for urea, we got, you know, right at 0.05, which, you know, everybody hates a p-value of 0.052, right? Come on. So EEF in this case included urea versus super U, which is MBPT plus DCD, polymer coated fertilizer, which is basically ESN, Agritane, MBPT, and there were a couple, and this isn't very common, but there were a couple with nitropyrene coated urea. And again, application time sort of blew everything else out of the water. So application time, very important, and big differences in bushels per acre. So, and again, there were some interactions with temp max, temp mean, min, and pH, and some of the other soil and climate variables. So, and this one, we also had the most observations. So this was 400 something observations, whereas this was 148. So urea is also just, you know, there's a lot more stuff out there for it. UAN was kind of there in the middle. Okay, so in conclusion, so enhanced efficiency fertilizers can have an effect on yield in some circumstances, but it's a little bit hard to tease out with some of the available meteorological data. So there is some evidence for trends to, you know, highly non-significant, depending on what you're looking at. The biggest thing, rate and application timing, are obviously way more important. And we did look at sort of the traditional meta-analysis at lower N rates, because everybody says, oh, well, enhanced efficiency of fertilizers only work at, you know, below optimum N rates. And we didn't see, like, everything become significant when you look at below optimum N rates. It didn't happen. So I often wonder, is this something that, you know, has just been repeated often enough that everybody believes it, or is there, you know, good evidence out there for it? So, and if you don't include the weather and soil variables, it's harder to tease out some of these effects, right? So it's really important to include some of this stuff. The other thing I would mention is, you know, we included seasonal precipitation and some temp max, temp mean, min, and we know that for some enhanced efficiency fertilizers that what's really important is, like for urease inhibitors, the week after you apply, right? And we didn't have that particular data. So I think if you wanted to really dig into one of these in particular, that you would be better off going for, you know, certain meteorological data that would really get at what you think is driving the effect of that enhanced efficiency fertilizer. So I think some of the meteorological data that we were able to acquire doesn't necessarily represent what would be driving the effectiveness of some of these enhanced efficiency fertilizers. So one of the big parts of this for our fund project was, a big part of it was just to get at the gaps of what do we know, what do we not know at this point. So one of the biggest things is just nitrate losses. So we can see that from the map. There's just not enough studies out there for nitrate losses. And in terms of the kind of regulation that's coming down the pipe in different states, we really need more information on this, both in tile-drained and non-tile-drained studies. And then N2O emissions, there's a lot of variability in how people do this and report it, so there's still quite a bit that needs to be done with that. A big thing is just please report, if you're going to publish stuff, please report your standard error, standard deviation, and please don't merge across stuff. Even if you have to put it in a supplemental, make a big old table for every year and every treatment, and that will make everybody's life so much better. Area versus yield, like I said before, I don't care which one you do, just make it possible to do the other one. And then if you can include meteorological data in a supplemental, that'd be great too. And I think this is something we've been talking about, that the journals are really going to have to start requiring and spearheading, is if they want more meta-analyses, they're going to have to require more information to be published. And I know in the past they kind of want to keep it short and sweet, but if you want to be able to do this, you know, you got to have this information. The other last thing is, so one of the interesting things out of this is, with this big compiled table, if you say you want to see, okay, well, we do this particular practice in Iowa, how many studies have been done with, you know, this rate and this time and this place, you know, you could go to this database and say, oh, well, there's no studies on UAN injection split with this enhanced efficiency fertilizer in Iowa. You know, so the nice thing about having these publicly available databases is if you want to do a project, you can very quickly see what's been done. So that's a nice thing about it. Hopefully I've got about the right amount of time. And with that, I'll take questions. So we have time for
questions. We do have time for questions for Rachel.
Yeah, so you can do funnel plots, right? So for a traditional meta-analysis, you can do funnel plots and sort of look at the spread. And we did look at that, and we didn't see from the funnel plot a tremendous amount of publication bias, but I know people that have done these studies and have not published them, right? So I know I have published, I know I have done field studies that I haven't published, because it's so easy when you're like, oh, I think I'll throw in a treatment of, you know, this with this on this other field trial I'm doing. And then you look at the data and you're like, oh, I didn't see anything. Okay, next. You know, and it's really easy to just, like, sort of forget about it, right? And we were, you know, some of us have been talking about, is there a way we could, like, do a survey to see what's been done that hasn't been published, and, you know, we would kind of have to, like, rifle through, you know, John Sawyer's, you know, file drawer, literally, to probably figure that out. But that's a huge issue for this stuff. Yeah. And Emerson, too, right? Yeah. So, anything else? Okay. Thank you.